This is an ABC podcast.
If there's one thing Australians know how to be smug about, it's that our country is home to some of the most incredible ecosystems in the world. But today, we're visiting one that is massive in size, massively economically important, and massively underappreciated, to the point that you may have never even heard of it. I'm Tegan Taylor, and this is Occam's Razor, a soapbox for science. Today, we're joined by marine biologist Kane Layton for a bushwalk of sorts.
Thank you. So imagine being in a forest with a dense canopy, a lush understory, surrounded by animals both on the forest floor but also inhabiting that space, that vertical space of the forest. But instead of walking through this environment, you're flying through it, being able to weave in and out and within all these different layers of the forest. Now, this sounds pretty magical, and clearly you will have guessed by now, I'm not talking about a forest on land, I'm talking about an underwater forest, a kelp forest, dominated by seaweeds. So seaweeds are broadly categorised into three groups based on their colour: reds, greens and browns. And kelp are potentially the most well-known of some of the seaweeds, and kelp are really just a group of seaweeds, specifically large brown habitat-forming seaweeds. And there's actually no formal scientific definition for kelp, which leads to some funny and quite surreal instances at international scientific conferences where a bunch of people get into very heated debates about what one considers kelp versus another, and I, you know, just sit there and think, what career have I chosen for myself? But just like trees in a forest, kelp come in all different shapes and sizes and also different colours, and they range from quite small, almost palm tree-looking species to species that look a lot like trees on land with quite thick trunks and branches and a canopy. They also have quite a wide range of colours. Despite being classified as brown algae, they range from dark greens to chocolate browns to almost goldens in colour. So they're really incredibly beautiful organisms. And not a lot of people realise, but Australia has some of the most spectacular kelp forests in the world. And in fact, our kelp forests of southern Australia form a continuous reef system, a cold water or a temperate reef system called the Great Southern Reef. Many people are often surprised that southern Australia, cold water Australia, has reefs. Reefs typically in Australia are, you know, considered something tropical, but reefs are really just any underwater complexity. On the Great Barrier Reef, that underwater structure, that complexity, is provided by corals. It's actually created by corals. The Great Southern Reef is a rocky reef system. So it's the rocks of our coastline in the relatively shallow environment, the rocky coasts of islands that create the Great Southern Reef. But the real secret to it is what grows all over those rocks, and that's seaweed and especially kelp. So the Great Southern Reef is about four times as long as the Great Barrier Reef, about 8,000 kilometres long. And it stretches from the New South Wales-Queensland border all the way south, down the New South Wales Victorian coast, across to South Australia, and about halfway up the Western Australian coastline, and of course, all the way around Tassie. And it's a global marine biodiversity hotspot, incredibly rich, supports literally thousands of species of flora and fauna across those 8,000 kilometres. And especially for the seaweeds, it's really regarded in some ways as the Amazon for seaweeds. And that's not just in relation to the amount of species here. Southern Australia, nowhere else in the world has the same type of species richness of seaweeds that we do here in southern Australia. But it's also an analogue to the Amazon in that it's really unknown. It's massively understudied and we really don't know what's out there. You know, for the vast majority of species on the Great Southern Reef, and especially the seaweed species, let's say 99% of those species have basically been looked at. Someone's maybe given them a scientific name, catalogued them, and then that's it. So massively unknown, massively underappreciated. But the really important aspect of biodiversity, of the life on the Great Southern Reef, is that the uniqueness. And so depending on the species group or the group of animals or organisms you're looking at, it could be fish or starfish or seaweeds, 30 to 80% of those species are found nowhere else in the world. And so that makes the Great Southern Reef really important locally and regionally for Australia, but also globally, because what occurs here doesn't occur anywhere else. So in terms of protecting this environment, it's very, very important. The Great Southern Reef, however, isn't just very environmentally important, it's also incredibly economically important. And each year it directly contributes about $10 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars to the Australian economy. And I emphasise directly there because, again, a lot of those indirect benefits are largely unknown. So those direct economic contributions arise mainly from fisheries, and the kelp forests and the Great Southern Reef support the two most valuable fisheries in Australia, the rock lobster and the abalone fisheries, two fisheries that are quite well known in Tassie. But in terms of those indirect benefits, you know, the benefits to coastal communities, wreck fishing, the coastal food webs, those are really, again, unknown, largely undervalued, but are certainly going to be in the billions and billions of dollars of value per year. Unfortunately, just like the Great Barrier Reef, the Great Southern Reef is also under threat from climate change, and it's also experiencing habitat degradation in across lots of its range. And I mentioned that the Great Southern Reef is a biodiversity hotspot. Unfortunately, it's also a littoral hotspot. And Southwest and Southeast Australia are both global ocean warming hotspots. For example, Southeast of Australia, the region that also encompasses eastern Tasmania, is warming about four times faster than the global average, so incredibly quickly. And in many ways, it's a window into the future. You know, the changes we're seeing here are really reflective of what's going to happen elsewhere in the world. And those climate change impacts are affecting our kelp forests, which are really the foundation for the Great Southern Reef. And unfortunately, Tasmania is a little bit of a poster child for kelp forest loss. So we have two species of kelp in Tassie, two really dominant species of kelp in Tassie, I should say. One of which is the common or the golden kelp, grows to a maximum size of about 6 feet, but probably closer to about a metre. And we also have the giant kelp, an incredibly, as far as seaweed goes, a pretty charismatic organism, can grow to the height of a 6 or 7 storey building. For the remainder of the talk today, just talk a little bit about some of the research we're doing here on the giant kelp. The giant kelp is one of those really vine, it's quite a thin species of kelp, it's quite vine-like. It grows together in these kind of almost, well, they are these impenetrable walls of kelp, and it's actually more like an underwater jungle than an underwater forest. And again, can grow to 6-7 stories tall, so these proper kind of vertical underwater habitats. Unfortunately, over the past several decades, we've seen about 95% reductions in giant kelp forest canopy cover. And that's from about the 1940s until now. And those losses are largely attributed to climate change and specifically the extension of the East Australian Current, which you might be familiar from the Disney movie Finding Nemo. So the East Australian Current, or the EAC, flows down from New South Wales, and it's increasing in strength with climate change and moving and bringing its warm, nutrient-poor water into Tasmania. And unfortunately, giant kelp really prefers cool, nutrient-rich conditions, so that water's really driving the decline of the species. So what we're attempting to do is to restore these environments, to actively go out and replant them. But a really kind of central tenet to habitat restoration, be it on land or underwater, is you have to solve or at least overcome the initial driver of habitat loss. It makes no sense to go and plant some giant kelp if it's just going to get wiped out again due to climate change, which obviously is not something we can fix in the short to medium term. So what we're doing is we're taking a little bit of a reverse approach to it. And instead of trying to change the environment back to the way it was, as brilliant as that would be, we're actually trying to help the kelp, the giant kelp, become more adapted to the modern environment and the modern conditions that we have created. So what we've done, we've gone out to the remaining kind of 5% of giant kelp forests in Tassie, which are still scattered up and down the coast, the east coast of Tasmania, all the way up in places like Eddyston Point and northern Tassie that are still very warm. Unfortunately, there's no more forests, giant kelp forests in those areas, but the scattered individuals that remain might only be a metre squared, no bigger than this space up the front here, or, you know, even just individuals scattered within a bay. And we've gone and sampled from those populations or those individuals. It's non-destructive. We just take a little leaf clipping effectively from the base of the giant kelp, and we release the spores in the lab here, just over the road actually, on the waterfront building. And we can breed them up in the lab, and we can then test to see if some of those individual giant kelp are just naturally more tolerant of warm water. The same way some humans are naturally taller than others, about 10% of the individual giant kelp that we tested are more tolerant of warm water conditions. And not just a degree or two, we're talking 3, 4, and 5 degrees more tolerant than kind of the population average. So what we've done is we can breed them up, those super kelp, in really, really high quantities, and we've actually planted them back into the ocean here in Tassie, in southeast in the Southeast region at three locations. And at two of those locations, we've had really high success rates. And we've now got, across those two sites, about 200 kind of stringy teenage giant kelp. They actually grow really quick. They're only about 9 months old, but they're already 4 or 5 metres tall, which is pretty cool, considering that when we plant them, they're only about a millimetre or so in size. So I'm just going to leave you, I guess, you know, the Great Southern Reef is incredibly important and valuable, both locally but also globally. And while it is under threat, there are a lot of people really trying to protect and conserve and potentially even restore these really important habitats. And I'll just leave you with a little bit of a, I guess, an underwater tip if you ever find yourself in one of these environments. So what do you do if you get trapped in an underwater forest? Will you seek help? Thank you.
Dad jokes aside, if you want to be gobsmacked, go and look up some videos of giant kelp forests. They truly are amazing. That was Dr. Kane Layton, a marine biologist at the University of Tasmania, speaking at our Occam's Razor live event at the Beaker Street Festival in Hobart last month. I'm Tegan Taylor, your Occam's Razor host, and I'll be floating back into your feed next week with another tale of Australian science.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.